This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you on this little chilly day.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it feels like winter's finally getting here, and of course, the rest of the country and Yankee land is snowed under. I'm glad we're here and not there.
Yes.
I guarantee you. You know, it's really funny. After Katrina, we lost our house. Our daughter wanted us to move up to Ohio. And I said, you've got to be kidding
me. I've had enough
cold weather training in the Marine. I'm not volunteering for any more snow. I guarantee you. Well, listen, folks. We have a really good show today for you. I've invited Dr. David Calderwood, who's on the front lines of trying to force this government to do what's right and let doctors provide the kinds of, you know, solutions to this COVID business that we've been dealing with. His therapeutic approach is something that I really want you all to hear. You're hearing a lot about it now on various, you know, Fox has really been really talking about. They've brought Dr. Makary from Johns Hopkins on. He was on the Wall Street Journal editorial report this past weekend. So, what's happening is that there is a sense of that there has to be something done to provide, you know, relief for people who don't want to do the vaccine, number one. And number two, now the vaccines with these breakthroughs are finding out that the vaccines are not all that good anyway. So I want Dr. Calderwood to talk to us about that, and I think that you'll find this to be a really good discussion with him. Before he comes on, though, I'd like to just spend a minute here talking about Martin Luther King's birthday. It's an interesting phenomenon. And I've talked to you all about this before in relation to critical race theory, how these radical leftists have got to throw King under the bus in order to provide an argument that this country is still racist despite what King did and all like that. And the only way this is going to be solved is to eradicate systemic racism by having a revolution in terms of how this country is governed. Now, look, we can argue till the cows come home about, you know, whether or not these people are right or wrong. I've said this before to you. They are absolutely wrong. And the rationale that I give here is that what King did was to create a social and political revolution that is with us today, and it's not going to be turned around simply because a bunch of leftists want to communize this country. So I do think it's important to keep that in mind as we go forward today. And it's an interesting thing in the newspaper Sunday, the Press Register, John Archibald is talking about how people like me, okay, who are using King, you know, when he says, you know, judge people on the basis of their character, not the color of their skin. See, we're all using, you know, we just cherry pick quotes from King and use that. Guess what? You can cherry pick all you goddamn well want.
Whoa.
Oh, sorry.
Whoa.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
Beep, beep, beep.
Beep, beep. Okay. Sorry. But here's the bottom line, folks. You have a situation where these people are using the worst part of our history to try to argue that nothing has changed. And all I can say is look at the social and political revolution and you will get the answer to why these people need to be forgotten and just essentially destroyed. So, and I have to apologize to Laurie for crossing the line there. But I have to say, it is terribly ridiculous for we have to listen to this CRT stuff, and hopefully we will end it. Okay. So, now that I've had this outburst, I'll calm down a second and welcome Dr. David Calderwood. David, are you there?
I am here.
Good.
Thank you, Lou.
Well, I hope you didn't hear that burst, but nevertheless.
move on.
I'm moving right on, okay? David, thank you so much for coming on. I think that it's so important for people to hear what doctors are trying to do to provide an alternative to the vaccine and the strategy that's involved with the vaccination program. So can you just give us a quick background on who you are, what you're doing? I know that you're part of the Frontiers of Doctors. I think it's also you're part of Concerned Doctors. So just elaborate a little bit about how you've gotten into this, and then we'll start talking about some specifics, okay?
Sure. Early in the pandemic, I was like everybody else. I was wondering how we are going to defeat this. I was very dismayed to find out that what was being recommended by the CDC and NIH is just tell people to go home and wait till they got so short of breath that they had to go to the hospital and be admitted. That seemed completely counter to any way we have treated disease in the past, and that anything that should work should be used. I then received an email, I have no idea how, from the frontline, America's frontline doctors, inviting me to the first White Coat Summit in Washington, D.C. And along with that, I received a copy of the white papers on hydroxychloroquine, which was written by Dr. Simone Gold. I read that and was very impressed that we have a treatment that would work, but I wanted to learn more about how to use it. So I went to the conference. For 2 days, we talked about treatment for COVID, including hydroxychloroquine, quercetin, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D, things that would help, things that were not being suggested or not being used. So when I came back to Alabama, since I was seen on television, I was interviewed, and everything that was done there was immediately attacked. Fortunately, the Alabama Federation of Republican Women called me and asked me to speak to their group on a teleconference, and I did, and somehow that became a weekly event, and it morphed into my being in charge of the meeting. We called it initially Physicians for Alabama, and people on the call would recommend different doctors throughout the state who seemed to be following the same scenario, and we band together, and we have grown from one doctor to now over 40 practitioners. We do have some dentists, a chiropractor, some pharmacists that are all part of, and we have become Concerned Doctors. We have changed the name and have a website, and there's a lot of information on that website, theconcernedoctors.org, that would benefit your listeners. So that's kind of how I got started. We all are trying to use early treatment of COVID to prevent hospitalization and death. And we have been pretty successful. Our small group have treated over 8,000 patients with only 3 deaths, which I think is remarkable considering the fatalities that were occurring in the untreated patients. So we continue to be successful at keeping people out of the hospital.
Well, David, I know that you and I have been engaged in various conversations at different times, and I know that we have this mutual appreciation for what you're trying to do, and we've certainly tried to assist you in that endeavor. Just as a quick background, I should have made this as part of my introduction. Now, you have retired from family practice after 39 years, if I'm not mistaken. So what you saw at the beginning of this in terms of, you know, telling people go home and stay away, and then if you have to go to the hospital, then go. That to me just is one of those. It is so opposite of what our medical profession has always done in terms of treating things. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And that is still being done today. I talked to a patient this weekend who went to Madison Hospital. They were seen in the ER, given a diagnosis of COVID, and given no treatment. They said there is no treatment, which it's fundamentally wrong. Now, we did monoclonal antibodies were developed, and they were very successful, especially against the Delta variant. But right now, they're not available. For some reason, in their infinite wisdom, CMS, or the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, has decided that they don't want to send out the Regeneron, which was successful against the Delta variant, and want to send out the new one that I can't pronounce, starts with an S, and they, because it's more effective against Omicron, which, but somehow it escaped their logic that Omicron very seldom is lethal, whereas the Delta variant is much more often lethal, and we need that more than something that's effective against Omicron. The Regeneron is not effective against Omicron, but it is effective against Delta, and we still have probably 40% Delta in the state. So right. Unfortunately, we don't have that tool, so now we need even more to use the tools which we have, which include hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, some other repurposed drugs like famotidine, finasteride, fenofibrate. There are a lot of medicines that have been shown to decrease the spread in the body and increase our ability to recover from this virus.
Right.
So there's many things that are being used and successfully.
Let me ask you this: How can you tell which of these COVID variations you have, whether it's Delta or Omicron or the original one? How do you so that you can determine which path to take in terms of your alternative strategy?
That's a good question, and it's difficult to answer because the typical tests do not tell you which variant or which you have.
Mm-hmm.
In clinical practice, we basically treat them all the same. And knowing that particularly the symptoms kind of give us an idea of what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
People with Omicron typically have a really severe sore throat, which you didn't see in the Delta or mm-hmm. the Alpha variants. With the others, it was more a flu-like illness with just real bad body aches, fever, cough, congestion, and that developed into the pulmonary problems, which was associated with a lot of blood clotting. So blood clotting and lung and respiratory failure were the causes of death in most of the patients early in in the disease with both the Alpha and the Delta variants.
So essentially, you're just going to treat it as the worst unless you see something like this sore throat, which is kind of a giveaway for Omicron.
Yeah, and even then, we still treat it with all of the same medicines.
Right.
There is a wonderful website that I recommend to all the listeners.
Okay.
FLCCC.net.
Repeat that, please. Repeat that, please, sir.
What's that?
Repeat that website, please, sir.
FLCCC.net. And yes, that is that stands for Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance. It's a group of critical care doctors who started treating this early and reviewed the literature from all around the world and said, what works? We want to use those things. And anything that has promise, we want to include. And because of that, they've been highly successful, one, in prevention, two, in early treatment, and even hospital. They have a what's called the Math Plus Hospital Treatment Guidelines. And if our doctors around the country were using that, it would markedly reduce the number of deaths occurring from this pandemic. Unfortunately, a lot of these things are being discouraged, which to me tells me that somebody has an agenda, and that I don't know, but whoever it is powerful, and they don't want effective treatments to be used. It may be because they are pushing for vaccine as the only alternative to end this pandemic, and lots of fear to get people to go ahead with those vaccinations.
Doctor, I have heard some of my friends have gotten prescriptions for ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Is there a website we can go to, or do we just try our doctors until we find someone that says yes?
There are our group, concerned doctors, are treating as many as fast as we can. There are a couple of other places where treatment can be found, including myfreedoctor.com, American's Frontline Doctors.org. I think even on the FLCCC.net website, they can find people who will treat. And we're trying to invite more and more doctors in the state to discuss with us and learn what we have learned. We have done extensive research into the literature, into the studies. Doctors are afraid to use ivermectin because it's been discouraged, and yet there are 75 studies to date with almost 60,000 patients, which shows even with the studies that have been designed to make it look bad, and show that it doesn't work, and if we had time, we could discuss some of those. But even with those studies filtered in, it's still 66% effective at preventing hospitalization and death. Even in late treatment, it's 40% effective. There has been a huge pushback against ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and now, oddly enough, even against budesonide. Budesonide is an inhaled steroid that is markedly helpful in patients who get pulmonary involvement of COVID-19. It has been shown for over a year now to be very helpful, and for reasons that I do not understand, pharmacies are now asking patients what the diagnosis is for which the budesonide is being prescribed, and if it's for COVID, they either won't fill it or the insurance companies won't pay for it. So even successful treatments, budesonide is used in COPD and asthma with great success, and it works wonderfully in people with pulmonary involvement of COVID-19.
Well, I mean, your explanation here just takes us right back to this fundamental question of, well, what is really going on? And you know, you're either led down to the road of there's a vast conspiracy, which is very hard to say doesn't exist. And I think that when you look at what the Lancet article in May of 2020, if I'm not mistaken, they came out against hydroxychloroquine as soon, and here again, I link it right back to Trump, because Trump was an early supporter of HCQ. They hated Trump. They had to make sure that that megaphone he had was, you know, not listened to. And so that and another, I think out of the New England, medical journal, they had two major, you know, hits or attacks on hydroxychloroquine, both of which were retracted. So I guess the question at this point now is the studies that you've done, and I know that in one of the conversations we had last year, you all were going to try to get University of Alabama at Birmingham, UAB, to do a study. Did any of that ever come to pass so that, you know, you would have an effective study that basically is peer-reviewed, all the rest of that stuff, so that you could argue from a professional standpoint that what you're doing stands up to empirical validation?
Yeah, we tried to get something going. UAB was involved with the Regeneron study, and they seemed to be very entrenched with the use of Regeneron and with the vaccine. In fact, they were one of the major players in forcing vaccinations here in the state. There has been a large study that has just come out from Brazil, in which they had over 200,000 patients involved in a very rigorous, well-done, double-blind study, placebo-controlled study, using ivermectin, and it showed that it was highly successful. So right. I think we have more than enough data now to say, you know, that really nails it. They finally did a really well-done study. What the World Health Organization has been claiming is that the studies were of low quality, and so they couldn't recommend it. Even though their own internal investigation group and an independent group said the studies were of moderate quality. If the studies would have been labeled as moderate quality studies by the World Health Organization, ivermectin would be the treatment of choice today. But let me just, you mentioned the study that appeared in the Lancet, in the JAMA, what was it, Lancet New England Journal, which was found to be a fake study. There were also studies that used hydroxychloroquine in toxic doses, one of which was Solidarity study done by the World Health Organization. And when they started this study, the Indian Council on Treatment of COVID contacted the World Health Organization and let them know that the dose they were using was toxic and would be lethal to some people. But they went ahead with this toxic dose anyway and tried to hide it by not including the dose in their published study. But it was found by some investigators who contacted the individual countries involved with the studies and found what was on their registry for the dose. And the dose was three times what is considered safe and three times what they published they were going to use. So this seems, as you mentioned, there seems to be a very concerted effort to discredit treatments, and I think it's more than just political. There is somebody who is gaining, especially by getting this vaccine, and certainly there are people who are becoming more wealthy and more powerful through this vaccine.
There's the essence of the problem, in that you've got, my understanding is that Fauci has an interest in this. Fauci in 2009, from what I've read, was in favor of HCQ as a means to help with any kind of SARS virus. He also was opposed to the masks in 2009. So, when you take it down to where you are, doctors in the front lines, here you are not only fighting the CDC, but you're fighting Dr. Harris in the Alabama Public Health, you know, group here, and the medical board, and, you know, the licensing board, because if I'm not mistaken, you could very well lose your license if these people decide to really go after you for doing what doctors do, which is to solve problems.
Yeah, there is some threat, and I have actually received a letter from the board because of things that I have said about the vaccine. My stand on the vaccine is that there needs to be informed consent, which is the backbone of ethical medical practice. But there has been no informed consent with this. People need to know the benefits, the risks, and of the vaccine and the effectiveness of the vaccine. None of that is being communicated to the public before they get this vaccine. It's now obvious from data that comes out of the United Kingdom, because we're not keeping good data here, but it shows that those who are over the age of 30 who have received the vaccine now have two times the chance of getting the infection over the unvaccinated. So getting the vaccine after for a few months reduces your risk, but after those few months, you have a double chance of getting the infection.
Doctor,
that does not seem to be very effective.
No.
Also, we have know from several studies, including one in The Lancet, that those who have been vaccinated have the same risk of spreading the virus to the unvaccinated. And the only way you spread it is when you have the infection. Since the vaccinated now have an increased risk of getting the infection, you know, there's no benefit to the public by giving this vaccine. There's only benefit to individuals who are at high risk. It reduces their chance of death, although that, according to the UK data, is that benefit is reducing with time as well. So there is some benefit from the vaccine to the individual person, but for public health, there is no benefit to reduce the spread or the infection.
Well, I mean, you can certainly see the breakthroughs.
So again, why are we mandating this?
Yeah.
You've got to stop and think, step back and say, there's got to be an agenda here. Why are we mandating something that won't prevent spread or won't prevent infection? It doesn't make sense unless you realize that somebody's benefiting from this.
Well, let me ask you this, and I wasn't going to go down this road because I think it probably demands a separate show, okay? But down here, we have brought the information that one of our really great researchers, Deke Cox, we've provided this information about the dangers to using these vaccines in the younger age groups, particularly in the children. And what we're finding is that the data is showing more and more of a risk for these age groups, particularly what we're seeing, heart attacks in extremely, well-developed athletes, people who are in really great physical shape, and there just seems to be a spike in the number of people who are dying from it. So just briefly, what is your sense of the risks to the various, you know, age groups to this? I mean, I think you just basically said if you are, you know, older, then go ahead and get it just to prevent the problem from having to go to the hospital. But what about these younger age groups and where they're pushing vaccination for these children to go to school?
To me, that is criminal. We know that the children do not have a risk of dying from this, almost statistically a zero chance of dying, but they have a chance of dying from the vaccine and being permanently disabled. So why would you give school-age children a vaccine that has no potential to reduce their risk of death, but could damage them for life? Plus, there's all the things we don't know about this vaccine. We don't know the long-term effects on cancer, neurodegenerative diseases such as ALS and Parkinson's and dementia and Alzheimer's. We don't know the risk for autoimmune disease, et cetera. There's so many things we don't know. And even with what we do know, if there's no benefit from this for kids, and it doesn't prevent the kids who from spreading it to others, as we know. So there's no benefit in vaccinating children. And yet they are pushing hard, and we are being told that it will benefit the children. We are being given a lot of misinformation about the risks and benefits of the vaccine, especially for kids and even young adults who are otherwise healthy and are now suffering from problems associated with the vaccine. We are planning a program the 5th of February in Birmingham and hope to have a program where we can highlight some of these individuals who have been damaged and they can tell their story, because these people, and you can find it on the internet, people who have had an injury from the vaccine and they tell their story, and they're told that it's all in their head, adding insult to injury. So they would like to express their what's happened to them and
right.
And give their and tell their story. So we're going to give them a chance to do that, and hopefully that will help people to understand that there is some risk. And if you're at high risk of dying from COVID, yes, you should consider the vaccine. But if you're at low risk, then it may or may not be the best thing for you. Each individual needs to study it out and pray. And whatever you feel inspired to do, you should do that. So I'm not against the vaccine for those who feel like it is in their best interest, and they should have the right to get it. And those who feel that it is could be damaging to them should have the same right to not get the vaccine. There should be absolutely no mandate.
Right.
But as a doctor, you just said it is criminal for our children to be receiving these vaccines.
That's my opinion.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the outrage is that for you to say these kinds of things and put it out on Facebook or something like that, you run the risk of being silenced, you know, as
exactly.
misinformation.
And the message that is coming across to the public is, if you're a good parent, you'll vaccinate your child.
Yeah.
And we want to give the message, if you're a good parent, you won't vaccinate your child. You will look at the data and see that you run a higher risk of damaging your child if you get vaccination. And it does not help the public. It does not help prevent infection. It does not prevent spread. So it's of no benefit to your child, and it
right.
could only possibly harm them.
Well, David, as we come up to our last few minutes here, just give me a thumbnail rundown on what individuals who are listening can do to improve their own immune system. And I know staying healthy and doing all like that, but what are some of the things that you would recommend? I know I do take zinc and vitamin D, and I try to do what I can do, but I'm sure that I'm just kind of, you know, it's a hit or miss process. So could you kind of give us a little bit more definitive approaches that we should be taking to be at least in the ballpark of being at the best stage where we can be to prevent, you know, getting this thing?
Well, I think some of those things that you mentioned are very important. We do need to take, and a lot of that can be found on that FLCCC website. Getting your vitamin D level up is crucial. I think 5,000 international units is probably, may not even be enough for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to get our vitamin D level up above 60. And if you do, your chance, one study showed that people who have levels above 50 almost never die from COVID. So that's one of the things that's real important. Vitamin D, vitamin C should be 1,000 milligrams, 1 to 4 times a day. Zinc, quercetin. Quercetin is a wonderful ionophore and helps get zinc into the cells, and it also binds to the spike protein to keep it from binding to you. Sunlight, exercise, hydration, avoiding sugar, highly processed foods and fats. People don't realize that a study showed that sugar shuts down your immunity for about 6 hours. If during that 6 hours you're exposed to COVID, it may reduce your immunity enough that you will get it. Whereas if you avoid those things, one other thing that's highly beneficial is nasal irrigation and gargling, especially whenever you go out in public. If you will, and there are on that same FLCCC website, you'll find instructions on what to do and how to do that. All of those things will keep your immunity up and minimize your chance of getting the infection. And if you don't get it, you won't have problems. You won't do poorly.
Right. Doctor, Laurie has another question.
Doctor, may I ask, I have seen more than one study indicating cannabis compounds block the virus from cell absorption in your body, CBD, CBG. cannabis, hemp, marijuana. Do you have any opinion on that?
I don't have, haven't seen the literature on that. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, Dr. Calderwood, I can't thank you enough for coming on today. If you would, please send me the information on the February 5th meeting, so the particulars about it, so I can get that out to the Alabama Conservative Coalition, as well as to our Common Sense campaign down here. And Health Freedom Alabama, another group that sprung up that has a major impact on what's going on in the legislature in terms of health questions. And I think that all of us working together in conjunction with your doctors who are on the front lines and doing so much work, we will be able to have this grassroots support that is absolutely necessary for you to be able to continue to save people who should not be going through this, given the Hippocratic Oath and what it means to be a doctor, and be so frustrated not being able to do your job because you know you can do it, you know? So we're here with you, Dr. Calderwood. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me on. We don't have particulars on the meeting yet. We're just it's in the planning stage, and
okay.
We want to get it moving here. And as soon as I have something, I will get it to you. We hope to encourage more doctors to join us and pharmacists and other people at trying to provide good pre-hospital care and minimize the impact of this pandemic.
Okay. Thanks again. Take care. God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Very, very important.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he's saying. Remember, I sent you a text from a friend of mine about a month ago who says, between the ivermectin, the hydrochloroquine at the initial onset, and on day 4 getting the monoclonal antibody infusion, she feels great. Spread the news to all you know so we can save lives. 800,000 people did not need to die from this. The medical profession is going to have a lot to answer for in the near future as all this comes to light, and there's more proof.
Well, here's the thing. Is it the medical profession, or is it the government that's pushing this? And again, I think that the doctors are in a very bad position because
they're
threatened with their loss of license if they don't play ball with the the wisdom coming from our wonderful Presidente, you know, get the jab. So look, folks, this is a life or death issue. There's no question about it. But I do think, you know, that we all have a degree of ability to search and find what's good for you and move in that direction. And I think that that's what a free society does. Laurie?
Yes. I was going to repeat a couple of the websites he gave us for those that may be tuning in or couldn't write them down. ConcernedDoctors.org, ConcernedDoctors.org, America's Frontline Doctors,
that's America's FLCC.
And then he's got
FLSC.
FLCCC.net.
Okay.
FLCCC.net.
Yeah, we'll put all this stuff. Laurie will get it up on Facebook, and I'll do the same for Common Sense and for the ACC. We'll get all that information out. Well, Miss Laurie, as usual, you have indulged me. And of course, I crossed the line, so I'm sorry.
Okay.
But nevertheless, I really appreciate the time today. This was an important. Dr. Calder is one of these individuals who has just been outstanding in leading, you know, and this is what we need. I mean, you can't have doctors just sitting around, you know, moping that they're not doing what they can do. I mean, the fact is he's taken the lead on this, and they've brought other doctors into the fold. So, I mean, it's basic leadership 101. You see a problem, get off your butt and go take care of it. So, and on that note, I am wrapping it up. We'll see you all next week. Take care. God bless, and God bless the USA.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and on 181 with the state-of-the-art car wash. You can hear this program later in its entirety at WABF1480.com.